There's a new version of that song. That's Madonna's version. But there's a new one out by Michael Bublé in which he turns it into not like a sugar daddy thing where it's like in this case, Madonna talking to what might be, you know, a sugar daddy on Earth or trying to get Santa to, you know, to return gifts in, you know, in return for sexual favors or however that oop-oop-y-doop thing can be interpreted. But the Michael Bublé version is sort of like the bromance version of that. I'll see if I can find it. Played as bumper coming up later on. I thought it was kind of a fun take on that holiday classic. And that's what this is, because now we're into Christmas, except for Hawaii. So all across the country, it is already stepping into Christmas, and thank you all for making us be a part of that. If you, like me, are up wrapping presents, and by the way, update, I did have enough wrapping paper for the big large box that I got for my wife, and in fact, I may have even a little bit more to wrap up a couple of things I thought I'd just have to stick a bow on. So, you know, it's kind of like a loaves and fishes thing. Kind of when I thought there wouldn't possibly be enough, there's always more. And it's like it is here on Coast to Coast. We're live 7 days a week. We pride ourselves on being with you while you are with us. And we also remind you that there are great presents waiting for you at coasttocoastam.com. Coast Insider is a great way for you to give the gift of Coast. And if you have been thinking about something for the Coast fan on your shopping list, it's really easy to get them signed up for Coast to Coast as a gift. Maybe it's a gift to yourself, too, so that you can listen to all of the shows at your leisure in 2012. And this would be one of those shows I think you might want to go back and listen to for the insights of Dr. Judith Orloff earlier. And now I think I put doctor in front of Rick Collingwood all the time, but I don't remember if he is one or not. But he is for the purposes of this show. Internationally recognized expert in hypnotism, an author and the founder of the Mind Motivations and the Australian Academy for Very Smart People. I can't remember what the rest of that is either, but we'll talk about that with Rick Collingwood coming up in just a second. We'll talk about what hypnosis could mean for you in 2012. Ways for you to improve your life through those types of self-revelations next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Okay, so you are a doctor, right? I mean, I didn't just make that up out of thin air. You're Dr. Rick Collingwood.
I have a PhD.
That's what I want. I went back to my, but doctor, you know, still a doctor, dude. You went all that trouble. We got to at least give you your honorific. I went back to the website to look again, and we didn't put Dr. Rick Collingwood on there, so we should.
I could live with that. Merry Christmas to you. How are you?
Merry Christmas. I'm so well. Thank you. And where are we catching you, in Australia or on the West Coast?
In Australia at the moment.
Well, thank you. So what time is it there for you?
It's 4:05 in the afternoon on Christmas Day. I've just had a lovely Christmas dinner.
Good. That's so great. So you've already had your big day. You've already opened up presents and everything?
That's all been done, my friend. And you guys are all getting ready to do it in the U.S.,
yeah.
Eh?
We are. Now, tell me, did you get anything fun?
I did. I got, I'll tell you, the greatest fun was seeing my 5-year-old son open all his presents under the tree this morning. Oh. He woke me up at 6:30. But I got some, the usual aftershaves and a nice pair of shoes. And what do you give a guy who's got everything, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, if my kids keep taunting me. They said, I have an 18 and a 20-year-old, and they keep telling me, you're going to love your present. We so scored for you this year. And I'm so curious as to what it is they come up with, because I really don't need anything. But they're so amped about it. I know it's going to be something good coming up in a few hours. Well, you know what you can give? What we can give is we can give your downloads, too. And I have listened to many times your Insomnia Cure that is part of your self-hypnosis series on iTunes.
Yeah, and how's that working for you?
You know, here's the thing about it. It's very comforting to me. I use it as sort of, I'm not sure I classically have insomnia. I don't know exactly what I have that keeps me from sleeping. It may be. And I know that insomnia is kind of a catch-all diagnosis anyway. but I love the sound of your voice.
Oh, thank
so
you.
The problem here is you might be talking and I might just fall asleep out of force of habit. So
you will not go to sleep. You will stay awake.
But I hear your voice, and that's exactly what I hear. It is like that. I love the ambient nature of your productions, and people can find them on iTunes and just keyword search for Rick Collingwood or hypnosis, and they'll come up. And you, I didn't realize this until I was doing some bio stuff on you earlier today. You have a gold record for hypnosis or something, don't you?
Yeah, I have a platinum lose weight and 5 golds. So
how about that?
That was some years ago. Since then, there's been, if I went to ARIA in Australia, I'd probably be entitled to quite a few more. But it's not about trying to win awards, you know what I mean? It's more
but that's still cool.
Things that work.
that tells you it works.
Oh,
I mean, because that's mostly word of mouth. It's not like you're getting a lot of radio play, so it's got to be word of mouth for it to sell a platinum number of anything.
Well, there's been nearly 1 million sold now, but something very exciting is happening for 2012. We've just released the 10 top titles or top programs on iPhone apps through iMobilize Metatron, which is a new company. They're on the Droid system at the moment, and they're about to go to Apple. So they're a new company. I bought some stock in it, and they're doing very, very well now. So it's all about expanding into 2012 instead of worrying about whether the world's going to end, making it a better place.
Well, I like that. So what you're, just to make sure I understand that, so you have new apps then for an iPhone or for iPad too?
Correct, and on the Droid system as well. So
okay.
They're done through iMobilize.
And, well, I love that.
They've just launched into the stock market. They're growing very, very quickly, and they're tied in, of course, with a lot of top titles that they've in the self-help field. They've got Eckhart Tolle and others, but their stock code is MRNJ, and they're a fantastic company. So it's very exciting because there's not too many hypnosis apps available on the market. So that's the big move for 2012, and it's all timed down perfectly.
So we're going to talk about self-hypnosis as a way of doing better, of clearing out some of the cobwebs for 2011 and having a better 2012. Is it a new book that I just got, or is that one of your other books that I just didn't know about?
That is a book that I began to write that in 2004, and every couple of years I update it, and it gets
okay.
Prophetic. So it's a reprint of an old book with a lot more information, and that's Go Deeper.
Right.
Yeah. That's selling very well as well. So
good.
It's just about learning how not to stress about all the negative things that we're hearing, especially these days.
That's where I want to start too. That idea of building up a barrier around, or better filters. I was raised with this phrase, to stand porter at the door of thought, and I always thought that's a really interesting way of looking at it. Is that we decide what we're going to let in?
Totally, we do. And our thoughts create our feelings. So if we let a lot of negative stuff in or have a defeatist attitude, we end up walking around wondering why we keep hitting brick walls. And it just becomes who we are. And it's very, very easy to be negative. It's a lot easier to be negative than positive. But, you know, really 90% of the negative thoughts and fears that we have, they never come to fruition anyway. So you really have to learn, I think, to live in the moment. And when the negative thoughts come in, I have a habit of telling them in my mind, you have no place here, go away. And it seems to work. They will just fade out of your head, and you'll think more positively. When you do that, you feel a lot better. You know, sometimes we can't change our circumstances, but we can always change how we think about them, and that's what's important, you know?
Well, and it doesn't mean that we have to fill our lives full of thoughts of balloons and bunnies.
No, we have reality to face every day, don't we? And the world isn't that way, unfortunately, but it really is down to what we think about it. You know, what is appalling to one person can be fantastic to another. And it's the positive people that seem to keep forging ahead. I think at the moment, too, with the way the economic situations are and all the negativity, and there's a lot of stuff out there about 2012 being massive changes for the world,
right,
which probably is, but they all seem to be negatively slanted. And
right.
if you buy into that, you're buying yourself into trouble and a negative outlook into life, I think.
We talked about that last week a little bit. In the first hour, we had a guest on who wrote a book called The Secret Peace. And it's all about how, if really, it's not hard to see how great things are, that there are so many good things that are happening, even if we just get outside of the setbacks of the economy, et cetera. But, you know, we're living longer, we're healthier. I mean, all these things that are statistically not just, you know, marginally true, but way true and have been for a long time, and that we have to embrace that, that things, we aren't going to hell in a handbasket. We could go back to certain periods of time and we can imagine that there was a better time. We can think idyllically about some period of history which we make out to be the apex of our civilization, but it really isn't that way. And politics aside, you know, I think we have it in our power to make it better if we insist on making it better instead of just giving up and going, oh, it's so terrible and there's nothing I can do about it. I might as well just take the slide along with it.
You can always do something about it. That's the thing. You just have to stop buying into. Look, it's funny, like you were saying, you can go back to any civilization or any time and go, well, that was better. But I'll bet within that time or that civilization, there were just as many people walking around worried, stressed and negative, thinking some other time was better. It really is what you make it here and now. You know, the future's not here yet, and the past now has really become a dream. And when was the best time in your life?
Right.
You know, can't pinpoint that, can you?
I thought that was a point made really well, and I'm only mentioning him in context of this movie, of your good friend Mel Gibson, and the fact that Apocalypto, I had never seen it from beginning to end. I got to tell you, that is a great movie. And it's a terrific movie for the symbolism that he spoke of. I know it got all sorts of weird criticism from people saying it unfairly represents Mayans or Aztecs or whatever. So I don't know enough about that. But I just, to let the story speak for itself and just to stand on its own, despite the brutality and the horror of it and everything, I find that message to be really well enunciated in that. Yeah. That we think, all of us think, that we have control. We never see the big changes that are right around the corner, and the big changes are always coming. And that this civilization that he portrayed thought of itself as being at the top of, if you'll pardon the expression, you know, top of the pyramid. And then suddenly, boom, before they even knew it, that it had slipped out from underneath them. And that's how we should always think of ourselves in a state, in a way, is we always have to be prepared for the changes that are coming. And then we won't find ourselves, you know, knocked out.
Exactly. And they're always coming, aren't they?
Yeah.
How boring would life be if they weren't, though?
Right.
Sitting down on the farm, just letting the days drift by. I don't think that we're supposed to live our lives that way. We're supposed to be people of action. And you notice the people of action are the achievers, and they seem more positive and
right.
They seem to get a lot more done. People say to me now, you know, I've been doing what I do for 12 years and I've had an extraordinary life with hypnosis. It's been very good to me. But, you know, people tell me now I'm lucky and they don't see the beginning. You know, I can remember when I very first began as a therapist, working 7 days a week, trying to make ends meet and pay the bills and wondering whether I should give it away and not do it anymore and go back to a better paying job. But now they say, gee, you're lucky. But I can remember all that hard work you did in the early days.
Right.
We have to build things in our lives. We all want everything to happen in the next minute, and it doesn't work like that. You know, things worth having, they've got to be thought about, reflected on, and acted upon. And that's the important thing. It's no good just sitting around thinking about things either. You have to be a doer to create anything.
You know, there's that old expression, show me somebody who's never had a success and I'll show you somebody who's never taken a chance. And it's not going to be one-to-one. It's not going to be every time you take a chance, you have a success. And these glorious failures that we can have are our biggest learning tools, and the reason why we have to, you know, we didn't marry the first person we went out with in seventh grade. You know, there's somehow along the way we learn about ourselves and we learn about other people, and that's the same sort of thing, I think, in all aspects of life. So how does self-hypnosis work then in tandem with that belief? How do we used that as a tool, as leverage toward a better 2012?
Well, down in the still place of the mind, or the hard drive, which is the subconscious, if you will, it's full of patterns and programs like a computer, and they keep getting enhanced by our thoughts and actions of day to day. So, for example, if you're feeling negative about not having a job and you begin to buy into the belief that you'll never have a job, quickly that follows through that you don't act upon looking for one anymore, then the next belief is, well, I'm never going to have a job again, or I lost a better job and I can't work for $4 an hour less than what I was getting, and you'll end up flat. Now, with hypnosis, getting down into the hard drive, you can literally change the program that's there. It doesn't change your circumstances, but it changes the way you react to your environment, and then you find that your circumstances begin to change anyway. So really, hypnosis will eliminate one program and replace it with a far more positive one, which will lead one to action, whether it be for looking for a job or quitting smoking, losing weight, whatever, any human condition, really. It can maximize your potentials.
Yeah, and that's another one of your self-hypnosis downloads, isn't it, on smoking?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember that. There's two of them now.
Is that really? That's so funny. You know, go ahead. No, please go ahead.
I was going to say there's some great specials at my website for the listeners today as well. If they get in and put the code Christmas in caps, they'll get a 30% discount off everything on the website. So
good.
That's some huge savings there.
I like that. Well, there's I'll tell you the reason why I brought up the smoking thing is I just smoke a pipe maybe two or three times a week at most. And sometimes I can go a couple of weeks without lighting up a pipe, but I was looking at that. Somebody asked me about that when I was filling out a form recently in a doctor's office, and they said, "Do you smoke?" And I wrote down, "I smoke a pipe, maybe once or twice a week." And the doctor said to me, "Well, we should look at that and really cut that down, really take that out." And I looked at him. I said, "You know what? You may be right. But once or twice a week, I don't really feel like it's affecting my health. And I have to be honest with you and say, if I'm smoking the pipe once or twice a week, that's a good thing. That means I've slowed down. That means I'm sitting on my porch. That means it's 9 o'clock at night and I've gotten my work done and I'm getting ready to think about the next day and I'm putting it all behind me." And I said, I kind of use the pipe as like incense. And I said, so if I eliminate the pipe, you know, I said, I don't know that that's good. But from his perspective, it was bad. From my perspective, it's a good thing. And I think that's so true of so many things in life. And, you know, maybe I have to stop that someday. But I have to say, I would miss that. And I think it's more beneficial to me in the long run, even though on his criteria, it's a bad thing to do.
But that's endemic. It's entrenched in all medical doctors about the evil teas of smoking. Mate, I would say to you, keep smoking the pipe. The enjoyment you get and the reflection from it would far override, even for your health, any health effects you might get from smoking a pipe a couple of times a week.
I think so, too.
Can I tell you a story about smoking in Los Angeles? I was at a thoracic surgeon's house one evening for dinner in Beverly Hills with some Japanese people. And one fellow went out for a cigarette, and everybody taunted him. I said to this thoracic surgeon, when everybody, the smokers had gone outside, "What's it like when you crack open the lungs of a smoker when they're having a triple bypass or something, when you crack their chest open?" And he looked at me, and he had a little bit of a smile, and he said, "If the person's lived in Los Angeles all their life, if they smoke, it's brown, and if they don't smoke, it's gray."
Because of Los Angeles.
He was basically saying the air's not doing much good anyway. So yeah. Not that I condone smoking, don't get me wrong.
I get it. No, but that's funny, isn't it? I mean, there's just so much we could do. I don't know. I think it's a good thing to not inhale so much smoke. But then again, you know, it's sort of like, to me, it's like the arguments against marijuana. And I think, okay, really, we're going to tell people they can't smoke pot, but we're going to tell them they can drink all they want, like that.
Yeah, they can guzzle a bottle of bourbon. Yeah.
Right. That doesn't far outweighs, I think, any pot implications. But all right. Well, again, so it's our friend, Dr. Rick Collingwood, and we're going to get a little bit more into self-hypnosis. We're going to talk about 2012 here coming up and some of the things that you can do to help kind of wipe off the lens that you're using to look at life and to make 2012 the best year ever. Coming up next week, we'll do the prediction shows, part one and two, Friday and Saturday night. Looking forward to that, spending time more with you on the way. Merry Christmas to everybody. From Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Dang, that's funny. Really is. So, happy, I think it's, what, day five, right? We're going to be lighting the fifth candle later on today, if that's what you're celebrating. And then whatever else is out there. You know, I haven't even looked at the calendar to see what's coinciding this year in the holidays. But if it's not Christmas and it's something else, even if you're celebrating just the winter solstice, thanks for being a part of it here with us live on Coast to Coast. We'll be live tomorrow night, too. And I'm still wrapping up the presents. So if you hear some crinkling in the background, it's not just paper, it's wrapping paper. So it's like holy. So it's like an obligation. I have to do it. But I'll get it done here while you're listening to the rest of Coast to Coast coming up next with Dr. Rick Collingwood. And remember, too, if you're looking for some last-minute gift ideas, it's Coast Insider. It's waiting for you right now at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Rick Collingwood, we were just talking about making 2012 our best year ever. Sometimes that means getting rid of things from 2011, even identifying the fact that we've got some baggage that we're carrying over. And one of those things can be perhaps, you know, feelings that people have had about politics and how the country's going or how the world is going. So what do you recommend? How do we break free of fear, for example, and start to embrace the possibilities of our life as opposed to just thinking, well, our life, our race has been run. You know, there's nothing left ahead for us.
Well, I think one of the important things is to accept that we can change for a start and then decide that we want to. Look, another very powerful thing to do, which seems a bit strange to many people, but I do it every morning for a few minutes in the mirror, is give yourself a jolly good talking to out loud. It's quite amazing the power of the spoken word, especially at your own reflection. If you wake up every morning and you look into a mirror and you state what sort of day that you intend to have, like realistically, and then you're not going to let things bother you or wear you down or take a negative approach and sort of state out what you want to achieve for the day, you set yourself up as best as what you can to have that kind of a day. Whereas if you normally wake up and listen to all the negativity on the news and worry about the mortgage and the bills and what have you, it just becomes a cycle of the self-defeating process. So a good way to start is by changing your self-talk. And the easiest way to do that is to begin to change your self-talk out loud.
I love that. I think a lot of people are self-conscious about that, needlessly so. So, you know, just make sure you're in a room by yourself where you're the only one that can hear you. And why not?
Well, you do what you just, I say to my wife, look, don't worry, darling, I'm crazy, you know that, but I'm going right to make myself talk, you know, and make a joke out of it. But it's a very, very powerful thing to do, and it will very quickly begin to change a lot of your own self-attitudes about yourself and about the environment around you. And it costs no money.
Right.
It just makes a decision.
And you can do that in a car. You can do that driving to work. You could do, you know, the second you start feeling yourself frustrated, you know, train yourself to just say, oh, here's that moment where these thoughts can either start to become the pattern for the day or I can keep breaking them before they get, you know, entrenched in my thinking today.
And you state that out loud. As you said, in a car with the windows up, nobody knows you're doing it. You stop the cascading immediately.
Yeah, you can even buy one of those Bluetooth things and stick it in your ear. You don't just have it in your ear. You can do anything you want in a car if you've got that in your ear.
Phone, yeah.
You're on the phone. You can be as animated as you want. You can do it. Everyone just looking and go, wow, he was having a really important discussion right there. It's like probably make it a big deal. Yeah, exactly. You're just calling yourself up, but nobody will know. As long as you've got something sticking in your ear, nobody knows.
Precisely. That's a really great way and very effective way to start. The other way is to get into some serious type of self-change programs like self-hypnosis. The term self-hypnosis, to do it alone by yourself, is a bit of a misnomer because you can only get down to a certain depth of relaxation, which is more like meditation, before you'll basically fall asleep. It's
right.
It's quite difficult to reprogram yourself because when we go into these deep states, we're actually going to the right side of the brain, which is very linear, and the left brain is active and logical and conscious. You can't switch one off and keep the other one active. So it's very hard to go into a genuine hypnotic state and give yourself positive suggestion, because usually you'll just fall asleep or go into a nowhere space. So this is where pre-recorded programs can come in very, very handy, because they do it all for you, and it doesn't matter if you go down into those deep, deep states. You're still getting the suggestions coming through that the subconscious mind will listen to and act upon, you see.
I have an elevator in my other building, and that is where I work during the week, and it just goes down. It goes up one floor or down one floor, right? So it's not a big building.
Yeah.
But I use that elevator all the time as my prayer closet. And I've sort of activated this habit in my head that I take that when I go downstairs, I hit, one. And as soon as the door closes, even though the ride is 20 very slow seconds as this old elevator creaks downstairs, that those are the 20 seconds I just turn to the corner, I take a moment. And because I don't believe that you have to spend a long time in prayer or meditation to start affecting a change. And I try to do that every time I get in that elevator, is it becomes, and sometimes that might be five times a day, where it's just 20 seconds five times a day. But it's not a bad habit to get into, to create that kind of almost Pavlovian response. So, when I get in my car, I always take a second to put on my seatbelt. When I get in that elevator, I always take a second just to try to push the thoughts out from earlier that day.
And do you find that's beneficial for you?
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Great.
Anybody else in the elevator thinks it's weird, but I don't really care.
See, that's the thing. We're creatures of habit, but we have to create our own habits so we can create negative ones or positive ones. You think of this: every time you take a shower, you wash yourself and dry yourself exactly the same way. And no one ever stops. If you start under the arm, that's where you'll always start.
Right.
If you start with the towel drying your hair, that's where you'll always start. You'll finish where you always finish. And you'll never realize you're doing it.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
So that reflects in all things we do in our life. And we see people, they say, I'm stuck in these patterns. It's like I'm stuck in a circle. And circumstances are different, but the situation is the same, or vice versa. And it's because we have these patterns stuck down in the subconscious that we even if we know that we can shift them, we haven't bothered to do it. And it takes a little bit of effort, but it doesn't have to be a difficult or stressful thing. And once you begin a change, it's the old story, the first step of the 1,000-mile journey.
Yeah,
everything begins with that first step, and then away you go.
So as we were, also talking about 2012, and we don't know what's coming ahead. That's the other thing. A lot of people experience anxiety about change, and they do cleave to the familiar. Do you work with that?
I do. Yes. Look, change, to experience anxiety about change is natural, because we feel comfortable with what we're familiar with, no matter how abhorrent it might be. It's like people in really bad relationships that stay there for years, and they finally develop the bravery, if you will, to escape the relationship and go, oh, I should have done this years ago. It comes back to making a decision and taking that first step. It's really that simple and that complicated as well. But look, at the moment as well, Ian, I think there's a lot of negativity out there about what may happen in 2012. Intuitively, I think it's going to be a fantastic year. I think it's going to be much better than 2011.
Tell me about your thoughts about the Mayan calendar and some of those prophecies for 2012.
Well, I read somewhere some of these Mayan chiefs are a bit annoyed. They weren't predicting the end of anything except the end of an age. And one of them was saying it's like at the end of 2011, we're going to throw our calendar out, and 2012 will start and we'll hang a new one up. This guy was saying they just decided to finish the age of that calendar in 2012 before starting a new one. But there isn't prophecies of doom and gloom and things are going to change, but it's a lot different now than it was in 1960 or 1970 or 1980. So everything is always changing. I think one of the worst things we could do is develop this belief that the world's going to have a pole shift or something's going to collapse and society is going to be wiped out. It may well happen, but if it did happen, there's nothing we can do about it right here, right now. And that's really all that we have.
Yeah, I mean, a pole shift could happen at any time.
Precisely.
Right. So you could, why is it any, I mean, sort of, why is it any more true tomorrow than it is, say, 3 weeks from tomorrow or 3 years from tomorrow? I mean, we could spend all our time focused on that or on what we would do to deal with it should it happen.
Precisely. Exactly. Yeah. Look, and catastrophe and calamity happens to all of us. You know, you can't escape that. It's part of the human condition. But once again, it's how planned you are for it and how you react to it that's the important thing. I'll tell you something. I haven't really made a big deal of this, but 6 weeks ago I had a stroke and ended up...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. It wasn't sort of put out as... what's the right word? I didn't fly a big flag about it. A few important people knew, but right. I was told I'd be laying on my back for 3 months, that I'd be in hospital. It took me 6 days to get out.
How about that? Now, was it a proper, I mean, pardon me for asking, but a proper stroke or one of those TIAs or?
It was a blockage in my brain stem. I just woke up one morning and couldn't walk properly. It was like I'd drunk a bottle of tequila. I don't drink alcohol, but
right.
I said to my wife, isn't this interesting? And I said, I can't walk properly. And then I turned the tap on to wash my hands and the hot water felt cold. And I thought, there's something serious here. So
yeah, really.
To the hospital I went. But this is the power of the mind. I lay down in a bed and closed my eyes and I imagined that I was walking up and down the hallways of the hospital. And I couldn't walk at the time. Within 3 days, the brain had started building new neural pathways. And in 4 days, I could walk. And on the fifth day, I was on a little walker to keep my balance. And on the sixth day, I was walking again and basically demanded that they let me out, which they were quite happy to do with some home physiotherapy. So, you know, I could have gone the other way and gone, oh, great, well, I've ruined my life. I'm going to lay in a bed here for 3 months and what's going to happen into the future and all the negativity. But you can't do that. You have to, well, I do personally, get up, dust off, and get on with it. But the reaction of the thought is a very powerful thing, physically, mentally, and emotionally. But fortunately, I've learned how to control my thoughts. And really, once you do that, you can significantly control what's happening to you and around you. You know, it's the random things you don't have a lot of control over, but you can always control how you react to them.
You know, let's take a moment to say in the next hour, I think that'd be a great theme for some of these calls are the thoughts over which you feel you have no control. And maybe Dr. Rick Collingwood can help you with a suggestion, a technique on you controlling you so that your thoughts aren't the ones that are driving the bus. But back, if I can, to that stroke in just a moment, it reminded me of something that happened in the news. I don't know if you heard about it. There was a young man who had been in a car accident. I believe it's down in Texas. Had been in a car accident, college kid, and had been in a coma. And his family was being encouraged by the hospital to get to that time when they would disconnect the life support. To recognize that there was no hope of him coming back from this coma. They were preparing organ donation, and the neurologist or the brain surgeon, however he's called, he looked one more time at a scan and said, you know what? He told the family, let's just wait another week. He said, I kind of feel it's a hunch. He said, I don't see a lot there, but it's just a hunch that maybe he could come out of this. And he's a famous doctor. He's the one that trained the doctors that helped save the life of Gabby Giffords. And and the boy woke up about 2 days after the doctor said, let's hold off on the organ donation. The boy moved his fingers in response to a stimulus.
Isn't it interesting that the doctor had the intuition, hey?
Yeah, and the doctor went with it and the family went with it. And then the boy just woke up, and he had been in a coma for all this time, and he just woke up. And he's coming home tomorrow, or I guess later on today now. And he's coming home to be with his family, being let out on Christmas Day. And I thought, wow, that's so fascinating, because it's easy to look at that and go, well, that's a divine miracle. But to me, there's something really horizontal about that, too, and that's being willing to go with our intuition, not being willing to accept the condition that we're in, and be able to imagine. So to have the imagination to see a different outcome.
Well, you know, I think maybe part of the reason that he would have woken up as well is you've got a doctor who he was put that thought out to the family. We're all linked at some level energetically. That's a scientific fact now. And if a lot of people start talking about that on a deeper level, it could give him some inspiration to perhaps come back to this world and give him that ability to move a finger. I've spent a bit of time in Europe with the mesmerists over there, such as Dr. Marco Perret, and look, they can affect people without saying a word, and I've seen it time and time again, and it's scoffed at by a lot of conventional science, but it's very, very real what happens in an energetic level or on an energetic level, and I see it constantly in hypnosis with people in deep trance. You can sit there and focus on one of their arms lifting, and sure enough, within a few minutes, the fingers will twitch and the arm will lift up. So everything isn't physical. You know, there's more going on in the unseen world than there is in the physical world. You know what I mean?
Right. So, well, tell me a little bit more about the. I can't remember. It's not Otto Mesmer. Who was the founder of mesmerism?
Franz Anton Mesmer.
Oh, that's right. Franz Mesmer. Right.
Yeah, he died in 1815, but he wasn't a hypnotist. Mesmerism or hypnosis followed mesmerism. It was brought to prominence by a Scottish surgeon by the name of James Braid, who went to see a magnetic healer or a mesmerist in Manchester to defame him and realized that it worked. But being a doctor, he had to bring some sort of evidence-based respectability to it. So he would use a hypnotic fascination, have people gaze at an object and talk them into trance. But when you read his own books, he said if he could do with his version of hypnosis 10% of what the magnetic healers could do, he would have been an amazing healer. But medicine often, it has to be evidence-based. So, of course, a lot of things are overlooked or not researched enough. But, you know, they've found all the receptors in our bodies now that make us so-called intuitive or psychic. And they're animal receptors. Like, you know, a dog or a cat can tell if it's going to rain. A pigeon can find its way home for hundreds of miles. Well, we have these same animal receptors in our body, but we're not aware that they're there. So we don't use them. So when something quite extraordinary happens because they've been accidentally affected, we call it being intuitive or psychic or whatever. But everybody has those capabilities. But if you don't know that they're there, you have no chance of using them in the first place.
That dovetails nicely into our first couple of hours when we were talking with Dr. Judith Orloff, who is a physician as well as a psychiatrist and a professor and an author, and talks a lot about intuition and activating the intuitive nature that we all have. And I think that comes with some practice. But I'm kind of curious. I'm curious about the mesmerists here in just a second, because I know that Mesmer was sort of the first person in Western society to start talking about the connection, the energetic connection. But when you said that they can move your mind, is that what you said at the beginning? What was it? How did you describe that?
Well, I've seen Dr. Marco Perret look at people and freeze them. You know, if you go to my website, you can see DVDs there of his training with people trying to resist him, pushing against him physically. And within 2 minutes, he's just got them in a deep, complete locked up trance without saying a word to them. It's all done through the gaze. He also trains exercises, obviously, in how to switch these receptors on. A lot of them are physical and a lot of them have to do with gazing. But I've spent 2 years with him off and on now learning these techniques, and I'll tell you, they blow hypnosis out of the water. When I do therapy now, I use a lot more mesmerism as such than what I do classical hypnosis. They're very,
I
very
love
powerful.
That. That's
but
fascinating.
They're all seen as spooky, new age, do stuff, only because they're misunderstood, and they're not the be-all and end-all of things. Franz Mesmer, he studied Richard Mead, who was an astronomer. Mesmer's classically called an astrologer, but he saw astrologers as cheap charlatans. And he also studied Paracelsus, who had studied the Egyptians and their sleep temples. And Mesmer sort of figured it all out. And he cured thousands and thousands of people, which was never disputed. But they threw him out of Vienna.
Let's see if we can't cure some people, too, coming up on the top of the hour. So hang on to that thought, and we'll pick it up next with Dr. Rick Collingwood on Coast to Coast. Merry Christmas. This is Ian Punnett.